I'm very happy as we begin our program to welcome to our show James S. Henry, Esquire. He's Senior Fellow at Columbia University Center on Sustainable Investment and Senior Advisor with the Tax Justice Network. And we're very happy to have you back on the program, James. Appreciate you making time for us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Most of our listeners have heard or read news reports about the Panama Papers leak of millions of documents from the world's fourth largest offshore law firm, Mossack Fonseca, based in Panama, that exposed how the world's wealthiest people hide their money in offshore tax havens. And that's a topic and a subject you've been investigating for many years, James. I know we've had discussions on this program years prior. But as we begin our program, I wondered if you would give us a sense of the scope of these latest Panama Papers revelations, who's named among government officials and the like, and why it's significant in your mind.
Well, this is by far the largest leak in history. We've had 214,438 companies that were set up by this company and the documents associated with those. There's about 11.5 million documents, including emails and a lot of identity documents. One of the reasons they're not disclosing this, and I've been working with them for the last few weeks on the documentaries associated with this. One of the reasons is to protect the against identity theft here, which is a real issue with this kind of doc. But there's about 370 journalists around the planet who are pouring through this stuff for the last year in 107 countries. The clients are from 200 countries, and they include, so far, we've identified about 22 current heads of state, 143 people in political office, quite a few family members who are associated closely with current or former heads of state, and quite a few people on the Fortune 500 list. So it's an incredible accumulation of influential people. I think there's several, I've been writing about Panama in particular and havens for 40 years. I mean, my first piece about the offshore banking industry was 1986 and about U.S. as a tax haven in 1989. So in 1987, I went to Panama, and I came across, in the course of investigating General Noriega and his involvement in drug traffic, came across Mossack Fonseca, the law firm here, and they were about 10 years old at that point. Back then, in the late 80s, there were only about 10 havens. And so one of the key themes here is now there's 91 or so Panama equivalents that are offshore havens. And there's quite a few onshore havens, the hallmark of all of which are is not necessarily attractive taxes, although that is a feature occasionally associated with this. They're called tax havens. But really, financial secrecy is what is really at stake. This case is more, I think, about kleptocracy in terms of public officials helping themselves to public assets or having offshore wealth that they can't explain, maybe due to corruption and bribery. And for many countries, especially in the developing world, kleptocracy is a more important issue. Corruption is a more important issue than just tax dodging. So I think, there's working with a lot of young journalists who are new to this topic, and so they're kind of educating them about the intricacies here. But, the fact is here, this is an important little law firm, but it's not really the fourth largest in the world. I mean, there are many other law firms like them in every haven, the 91 havens. And there are many firms back in the destination capitals, the first world countries where a lot of this capital ultimately ends up after having been anonymized through shells and trusts that are, companies like Mossack Fonseca set up. There are big law firms there that are using these guys. I mean, another key theme here is that this is not a kind of archipelago of treasure islands, but it's a network. And, you know, Mossack was getting taking orders from more than 500 banks around the world, including big ones like HSBC, the largest bank in the world, UBS, Credit Suisse, you know, many other leading banks were essentially sending them business. They didn't go out and call on President Putin or his cronies themselves. I mean, this little Panamanian law firm has 500 people and a revenue of $42 million a year. You know, they are dependent on this network of references, the enablers in the world, and that's where they got most of their business.
Thanks for that, James. I wonder if you could explain to our audience how the Mossack Fonseca revelations fit into the global tax avoidance that you've estimated at between $21 and $32 trillion in private wealth in offshore tax havens, and that doesn't include the trillions of dollars more in wealth hidden by many global corporations.
That's right, and it doesn't include non-financial assets like real estate, yachts, art collections. I mean, one of the interesting revelations this week in this Panama Papers case has been the role of so-called free ports in Switzerland in hiding art, art that's registered in the names of some of the havens. Well, I mean, the tax angle to this, you know, our estimates are as of 2010. What we've seen since then is that the numbers for the worldwide haven industry have grown even farther, especially from countries like Russia and China, which have been in the last two or three years subject to a huge amount of capital outflow and, you know, $1 trillion from China in the last 18 months. Russia probably has more than $1.3 trillion offshore. Argentina, leading Latin American countries have more than $2.5 trillion offshore, which is more than twice their external debt. So a lot of this is motivated by taxation, but it's also motivated by political risk. You know, the ruling elite in China, for example, I think is concerned about the crackdown and corruption, and many people want to have their money in Vancouver rather than, you know, in Shanghai. So there are political factors at stake here as well. And, you know, but I think what you have to imagine is something like the Star Wars bar scene where you have the drug dealers, the tax dodgers, the kleptocrats, the people worried about being raided by the political police, you know, all gathered around using the same basic facilities, which are offshore companies and trusts that are very easy to set up in other people's names with nominee directors. There's one lady who is a secretary for Fonseca who is listed as a director for 24,000 letterbox companies that were set up, all of them owned by non-residents of Panama. So it's this financial secrecy kind of facility, the lack of any registration of so-called beneficial owners, so we don't know who owns what. And I think that's one big contributor to this, but it's also this network of basically unscrupulous law firms, banks, and accounting firms that are channeling all of this business to these people and the public officials that have failed for 40 years to crack down on this.
We're speaking with James S. Henry Esquire, Senior Fellow at Columbia University's Center on Sustainable Investment and Senior Advisor with the Tax Justice Network. James has long investigated tax shelters and tax havens across the globe, and we're happy to have him here to help us make sense of this incredible release of documents from known as the Panama Papers. James, do we know how these documents found their way into investigative journalists' inbox?
Well, it appears that this newspaper in Germany got the first contact, in Süddeutsche Zeitung, it's called. And then they invoked the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists to come and help them because of the sheer size of this. The Mossack Fonseca says that it was a hack, not a leak. You know, at this point, we really don't know. It's somewhat concerning to me as, you know, someone who's used to seeing whistleblowers. I prefer to know kind of what the whistleblower is up to and to work with someone who's more or less transparent. But in this case, we have more of a deep throat situation. But the data has been substantiated, and I think the evidence is clear. So, you know, some people have suggested that it's an intelligence agency behind all this, somehow screening this to journalists. I mean, from my standpoint, I don't really care about that. It would be one of the best things intelligence agencies have done in my experience if this is some kind of CIA plot. But I doubt it. I think it's probably will ultimately determine that it's a whistleblower, an insider. I mean, one of the themes here is that this data did not come to us by virtue of, you know, law enforcement. It's basically hardworking journalists around the planet who have been mining this stuff and making sense of it. And, you know, that's kind of a pattern we should remember, the importance of having laws that encourage journalism and whistleblowers.
I wanted to ask you about the particular danger you see in the collusion or unholy alliance between politicians, the super rich, corporate executives, and banking officials.
Yeah, I think that this kind of underscores that that dodgy little connection that you know, we're seeing more of brought to light. We've suspected it's true, and we've known, you know, every decade we've had revelations about going back to the Marcos money that was stolen from the Central Bank of the Philippines and wired to Swiss banks. You know, Abacha in Nigeria, the dictator who stole, you know, billions of dollars and sent it to London. Angola, dictator who sent billions to Portugal in many cases. You know, and many others. There's a long litany. I've been investigating, you know, a dozen of these folks. The story doesn't get better over time. I'm kind of tired of it, actually. I mean, I would, you know, we've kind of known about this for so long and have done relatively little to clean it up. The OECD has been waked up in the last 5 years and proposed things like beneficial ownership registration, public registries. We've had proposals to have, you know, to blacklist various havens that keep on doing this. My own favorite idea is to have an international commission with some subpoena power, like they've just had successfully in the country of Guatemala. Independent commission came up and basically, you know, investigated the president and vice president. They had to step down. That's, you know, on a global scale, what we're talking about is a huge problem. And this Panama law firm is one cog in the wheel. But, you know, if they disappeared from the face of the earth, the big institutions that are behind them would still be in place. And it's Credit Suisse has 2 million clients in 41 countries and $1 trillion of assets under management and 26,000 people in private banking. So, you know, this is the one Panama law firm kind of pales by comparison with respect to some of the heavyweights in this industry. But there are things that we should be doing about it.
Yeah, no, well, I certainly want to review that before we say goodnight. But James Henry, can you make the link between tax avoidance on the scale we're talking about here with this, the Panama Papers illustrate and many of the other shelter schemes, tax shelter schemes we've seen uncovered from time to time across the world. I wonder if you'd talk about the link both to inequality and unfair tax burdens that average citizens have to bear because of these schemes to cheat the government on taxes paid.
Yeah, I mean, I think the connection to inequality is clear. Of the, you know, I think our latest estimate would be on the order of $25 trillion offshore, 25 to 36 in financial wealth. All of that belongs, virtually all of it belongs to the top 0.1% of the world population, fewer than 10 million people. And it's left out of all the statistics that Piketty and other people have been reporting for global inequality, which we already know is headed in the wrong direction. Inequality like that not only has important social consequences and important macroeconomic effects on savings and investment, it also has a dramatic effect, I think, on political inequality and the kind of the overrepresentation without taxation of this top class. Essentially, you have people turning up as, and companies, as citizens of nowhere for tax purposes. I mean, I know an individual in particular who has an island in Panama. He has a house in Park Avenue. He has a house in London and a house in Copton Teeth. And he basically roams the world as a citizen of nowhere for tax purposes, living as a non-resident alien in the United States up to 130 days a year, as a non-dom in London. I mean, essentially paying no income taxes. Now, over time, those of us who are not mobile and are earning labor incomes and don't have most of the income from capital are finding that we're competing with people whose taxability is been declining because they have all this mobile wealth and income. And so that erodes, the equality of the economy and the fairness of the economy. On the other hand, these folks have tremendous representation by way of not only directly, but also the banks and the lobbies in Washington. I mean, there's 1,800 tax lobbyists in Washington, and they're not working for you and me. So we've seen since the 1970s an erosion in the United States of income tax progressivity. We've seen corporate rates and individual rates come down dramatically, even as this haven industry was growing. And so it's not really the tax system that is driving people to go offshore. It's the haven system that's putting burdens on the tax system. And you end up with a tax regime like you have in Brazil, where the top 10% of the population pays a lower share of the tax burden than the bottom half of the population. Now, nobody likes to pay taxes, but the point is that there's a whole set of expenditures of health and education and national defense and roads and highways and lots of science that wouldn't get done if we didn't have a tax system. We've tried debt finance, we've tried inflation finance, we've tried privatization. Those are really inferior alternatives to having a well-run, well-supported, reasonable level of taxation to support the government. And, if we don't have that essential 30% of GDP that is unavoidably spent on government services being funded by, the top classes in society, if they're just going on strike, then it's going to shift that burden to the middle class and the poor. And over time, it erodes democracy.
And that's the kind of state someone like Ayn Rand would love to see, but I wouldn't.
Well, I think, if you want to see Ayn Rand in practice, go to Haiti. I mean, they have a private education system, a private health system. The judges are for sale. The police are for sale. There's virtually no government at all that's not for sale. And a perfectly libertarian society, it's kind of a war of all against all. I don't think anyone denies that we can always make improvements in the quality of government and service, but we can't do that by abolishing these services. But for 30 or 40 years, we've had this free market mythology that's been basically attacking government to the point where you have people today like Ted Cruz that would like to have us turn into a tax haven explicitly, cut our taxes to attract capital and to compete globally. Well, that kind of that ends up in tax competition and a kind of race to the bottom that I don't think is going to be healthy. I mean, we cut our taxes, Canada cuts theirs, the UK responds, and pretty soon, it's hard to cut below zero.
Right, and the consequences are dire. James S. Henry, one last question for you. I'd like your take on U.S. tax shelters. There, I think most people who've been following the Panama Papers expose think about tax shelters in places like the Cayman Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Switzerland, Panama, of course. But few people think a few people think of states like Delaware or Nevada. We've got a big tax shelter problem right here domestically in the U.S. Would you discuss that for us?
Secrecy. Yeah, we have financial secrecy in those states, and there's a growing number of them. There's 49 states that now offer LLCs or companies that don't have beneficial ownership declarations, including states like Delaware and Nevada and Alaska and South Dakota. They also, 13 states have asset protection trusts that are as good as the Cook Islands. But I would still say that on balance, well, you know, I've been saying the U.S. is a tax haven since the 1980s. Basically, the reason we're a tax haven is because our tax laws are that way. We favor non-resident aliens who come here and invest tax-free. Most kleptocrats are not going to Delaware. I mean, you walk into a Swiss bank with 500,000 euros, you can deposit it without any trace. That doesn't happen in Delaware. So, you know, we still have relatively high tax compliance in the U.S. compared to many of these countries, and we have a relatively strong legal system, but we don't have that many kleptocrats, as far as I know. You know, I mean, we have work to do on making the United States more transparent and clean up our own act so we can say to the world, we're actually not a secrecy jurisdiction either.
Well, just a final quick one here. What would be the top two actions you would like to see the U.S. government take in coalition with other governments around the world to close off these tax loopholes and make the playing field more even for all taxpayers?
I have a slightly longer list than just two, but the International Commission with subpoena power, like they have in Guatemala, I'd like to have beneficial ownership registration in the public register so we tell who owns what. I'd like to have public officials have to release their tax returns and declare their offshore and onshore wealth. And I'd like to have tougher penalties for the banks and other enablers that are in this business. And I'd like to have a blacklist for havens that keep getting caught doing this over and over again, like Panama and to some extent like Delaware.
Well, James Henry, what are some of the resources you'd suggest to our listeners who want to learn more about the Panama Papers, the tip of the iceberg, and a lot of the research you and other investigative journalists have done in recent years? So what were some good places people can go on the net?
Tax Justice Network is worth Googling. We have an awful lot of information on an updated daily for that. We have a number of basic reading reports that we've had. The Price of Offshore Revisited 2012 is available. The Blood Bankers, if you're interested in developing countries, it's a book I wrote in 2005, and a new book called Global Tax Fairness, Oxford 2016, which is just out. But, you know, there's also great documentaries on this stuff. There's a documentary on Netflix called We're Not Broke, which is about corporate tax dodging, and there's a new documentary out. There's the Toronto Film Festival called The Price We Pay, which is just about this offshore industry. And there's going to be a lot more material coming out. And I'd like to give credit to the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists for really driving this forward. I mean, it's a risky exercise. There's a couple journalists in Iraq and Egypt who have already been fired or otherwise threatened for this. We have people in other countries that are also doing much more risky work than people like me in the United States. But we have to encourage our journalists, and they're producing an awful lot of material. But the thing is not to get jaded about it. There's much that we can do if we inform ourselves and get busy recovering our democracy, because it is up to us, not, you know, any particular political party.
Well, James, thank you so much for spending time with us and really getting into some of the details, the important details of the Panama Papers and the other enterprising journalism that has really exposed this horrendous network of tax avoidance across the world. Appreciate you being here, James. Thank you.
Great. And you can follow me on Twitter at Submerging Market.
Submerging Market? That's
Submerging
it.
Market.
Got it. Okay.
Thanks
again,
thanks very
James.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Great.
That's James S. Henry, Esquire, Senior Fellow at Columbia University's Center on Sustainable Investment and Senior Advisor with the Tax Justice Network, talking with us about the Panama Papers and tax shelters, tax avoidance, and the trillions of dollars across the globe. Stay tuned. This is Counterpoint. My name is Scott Harris. We'll be back in just a few moments. Here's some music from the OJs.